Welcome to Conversations with David Lewis. Today, the U.S. attorney scandal. My guest is David Iglesias, the former U.S. attorney in New Mexico. He was one of the eight U.S. attorneys suddenly fired with no warning in 2006. David Iglesias' new book on his case, Injustice, Inside the Scandal That Rocked the Bush Administration, is now in your bookstore. David Iglesias, welcome to the program.
Thank you, David.
Let's start at the beginning. David, you are a military veteran, Hispanic, evangelical, a lifelong Republican, a strong Bush supporter, appointed to your job as U.S. attorney through your political connections and background in New Mexico. Tell me about the job and why you loved it.
Well, it was the most responsible job I've ever had, a job of tremendous responsibility and authority. We enforce federal law. There are approximately 4,000 federal criminal laws, and United States attorneys are at the leading edge of making sure those laws get enforced. Those of us on the southwest border districts, which are Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, and California, we bear the burden of prosecuting almost one-third of all federal prosecutions. These are typically immigration-related crimes and narcotics trafficking crimes. And I had a great staff, good resources, morale was good, and my office evaluations were excellent.
You've had several moments of fame in your life. You were one of three JAG lawyers whose story of a case in Guantanamo Bay became A Few Good Men. You were sort of a third of the Tom Cruise character.
Right.
And then your sudden firing as U.S. attorney, and now you got a book out. You've done a very good job of staying in the news, although not necessarily for great reasons.
Well, I've just been really fortunate in my life to be at the right place at the right time. When I went down to Guantanamo back in 1986, I had no idea that part of our initial defense team was Aaron Sorkin's older sister, Debbie Sorkin. She gave the transcripts of the pretrial hearing to her brother, and the rest is history. You know, initially when I got fired back in December of 06, I thought I was the only one, and then I found out relatively shortly that there were 7 to 8 others that had also received a very inappropriate phone call. And, with this book, that was a great opportunity to tell America why the principle of having independent prosecutors is so important and why the rule of law can never be ignored, especially in our court system.
Well, let's go back a little. You ran for Attorney General in New Mexico. You were supported by the senior senator of New Mexico, Senator Pete Domenici, and you came in along with the 93 other U.S. attorneys at the beginning of the Bush administration. You were one of the new people coming in with the new president.
Exactly.
What happened? What went wrong?
I put a lot of the blame on Karl Rove, who viewed political appointees as, you know, fungible goods. We were all kind of interchangeable, and he didn't view prosecutors, unfortunately, as any different. You know, had he really sat down and thought about it, he would have realized that we're the only political appointees that take away people's lives, their property, and their liberty away, you know, through the court system. We wield tremendous power. Former U.S. Attorney General and Supreme Court Justice Robert Jackson said that we're the most powerful peacetime forces there is in this country, and he was absolutely right. Roe viewed us as just like political pawns, and when several of us did not indict bogus voter fraud cases or indicted powerful members, Republican members of Congress, I believe they were looking for a different team, a team of politicized prosecutors. And, you know, we can't have that in this country. Politics can never be part of the equation when you charge somebody with a crime. It has to be based on the evidence and on the law and nothing else.
You told me when we first met a number of months ago that when you got the job, you came in with an audience for the then Attorney General, John Ashcroft, himself a very political animal, not someone seen generally as a political human being. What did he say to you about the fact that you had gotten the job because you were a politician, but that you were no longer going to be a politician in the job?
Well, yeah, he was crystal clear. In fact, I was in his office summer of 2001. His deputy, Larry Thompson, was there. And Larry said, well, you know, Dave ran for state attorney general back in 1998. And Ashcroft said, well, let me make something very clear, David. Politics can never be part of your equation in charging people with a crime. That has to stay outside the door. That left a real impression because, as you state, Ashcroft had been a U.S. senator. He'd been a governor twice. He'd been a state attorney general. I mean, he'd run for office. He knew politics. And then I later found out every incoming new U.S. attorney received the same comment from Ashcroft about keeping politics out. And that's excellent advice. It's true for every administration. But for some reason, second term of the Bush administration, that advice went by the wayside, and with disastrous results for the Justice Department, I might add.
When Alberto Gonzalez became the U.S. Attorney General, you and your 92 colleagues went to a meeting to meet him. And what did he say to you then about who you were now working for?
Well, he said we're working for the president. This is a first all-hands, so to speak, meeting of the new U.S. Attorney General and all United States attorney from all over the country. And McKay told me later, John McKay was a U.S. attorney from Seattle who was also asked to step down. I remember McKay telling me later, wait a minute, we work for the people. It's the United States of America versus whoever we're prosecuting, not, you know, George W. Bush versus whoever we're prosecuting. That left quite an impression on John and other people, because Ashcroft would have never said that.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the rule of law. I mean, you were in the military for how long?
4 years active duty, and I've been a reservist for over 20 years now.
The notion of what makes this country unique is precious to you, your personal background and family background. And so the rule of law is something very precious to you, but why? What makes that concept unique and thus our country unique?
Well, you have to understand that my father's from Panama, and I lived there for 8 years as a child and for a year in high school. In lots of places like Panama, when you don't have the rule of law, you have preferential treatment of people based on how close they are to the leaders. You have injustices that happen all the time. You can never tell when somebody's charged with a crime if it's really because they broke the law or because they crossed the party in power or the person in power. You know, it leads to tremendous injustices. America stood apart in a handful of other countries in terms of saying, if you break the law, it doesn't matter who you are, there'll be consequences. And the rule of law is really one of the pillars of our experiment in democracy. And with the attempt to politicize DOJ, we were heading down the path to perdition as far as it regarded the rule of law. And I'm really glad my colleagues and I spoke out, which led to more investigation. They found out there was more politicization going on at the Justice Department in Washington. The results have been very painful, but it revealed a lot of instances in which politics had entered in at very high levels at the Justice Department, and that's been reversed.
Let's go to December 2006. You were in Washington. You got a call on your cell phone. Tell me about that call.
Yeah, it was actually, ironically, it was on Pearl Harbor Day. I was doing some Navy Reserve duty in Newport, Rhode Island. I was flying back home, and I got a call at the Baltimore-Washington Airport. It was an email. It was an email on my BlackBerry. Saying to call Mike Battle, who was the then head of the Executive Office of U.S. Attorneys at the Justice Department. And I called Mike, and I thought it was kind of odd. And just Mike was a friend of mine, and he just said very directly, look, the administration wants to go a different way, and we'd like to have your resignation by the end of next month. And I said, wait a minute, what's going on here? I knew my evaluations were great. In fact, I had a letter from Battle himself applauding me for carrying out the president's crime priorities in a professional manner. So I knew performance wasn't a problem. And Mike said something that really has resonated since then, and that was, well, he didn't know and he didn't want to know. All he knew was it came from on high, which told me that the White House had been involved in this. And initially I thought I was the only one. Within a week or two, I found out that there were others.
And they were pretty remarkable people, military veterans like Dan Bogdan, Republican stars in Washington State like John McKay.
Well, John had been a White House fellow also, which is a real, it's basically, the U.S.'s Rhodes Scholarship program. Bud Cummings had run for Congress as a Republican. You know, Carol Lam, went to Yale undergrad and Stanford Law School. Charlton had been a career federal prosecutor in Phoenix. Margaret Kiara was the first woman ever to be appointed U.S. attorney in the Western District of Michigan. Todd Graves had run for statewide office in Missouri. I mean, it wasn't like we just graduated from law school and didn't know what we were doing.
Your office in particular had a really great track record.
We were reported by USA Today using DOJ figures that in terms of productivity, Charlton's office in Arizona was number one. I was number four, and Carol Lam was number seven. This is out of 93 federal districts. They fired three of the top 10 U.S. attorneys.
So as you took in this punch to the gut just before Christmas and tried to figure out what to do, what did you begin thinking, and when did you begin to suspect that politics had taken a part in this?
About a week later, I get a cryptic email from John McKay in Seattle saying he was moving on, but didn't say where he was going. So I thought, well, that's really strange. So I sent him an equally cryptic email saying, John, did you get the same phone call I got? And he called me right away and said yes, and I've heard there are up to 10 more. So I asked John, who always had better sources in Washington than I did, and I said, who are they? So he gave me a list, and I just started calling him. And most of the people on the list were actually, it was true, they'd received the same phone call we did all on December 7th of 2006.
And you started to remember phone calls that you'd been getting, political pressure that you'd been getting. So tell me about that.
In my tenure as U.S. attorney, I never received phone calls like I did in October. I got a phone call from Heather Wilson, who was my congresswoman from Albuquerque, wanting to know about sealed indictments. Well, a prosecutor is legally prohibited from talking about a sealed indictment until after the court makes it public. So I didn't tell her anything. About 2 weeks later, I get a call from my sponsoring U.S. Senator, Pete Domenici, who wanted to know whether I'd be filing corruption indictments before November. And he was referring to the same matter Heather Wilson was asking me about,
which had to do with voter fraud, which was, you know, alleged voter fraud on the behalf of the Democratic Party in New Mexico, correct?
The voter fraud issue was something that the local Republicans were angry with me for not finding any cases worth prosecuting. I mean, I set up an election fraud task force. I worked it with the FBI, with the Justice Department, state police. I wanted to file prosecute voter fraud cases. Couldn't find anything I could prove, so obviously I didn't authorize anything. But what Wilson and Domenici were asking me about was a corruption case involving a very, very prominent local Democrat here. They wanted, especially his call, he wanted me to expedite and file this prior to the election, which would have been to Heather Wilson's benefit. Domenici called me at home. I'd never received a call from any member of Congress at home asking for, you know, highly confidential information. And then he ended up hanging up on me when I gave him an answer he didn't want, which was a hedge. I basically said I didn't think so. And then he said, I'm very sorry to hear that. And the phone went dead.
What was your reaction?
It was a kick to the gut. I knew something very bad had just happened. My wife, fortunately, was standing a few feet away, so she could, you know, hear my half of the conversation. And I remember thinking, I wonder what's going to happen now. Well, nothing happened immediately, but as the record has come out, as the evidence has been made public, I was the last U.S. attorney to be put on the firing list, and that was about 2 weeks after Domenici's phone call. I got put on the list on November 7th, which was Election Day, when it became clear that I wasn't going to file any public corruption case.